Welcome to Continued Success, a joyous Friday episode. Not like those other Friday episodes where we'd all be podcasting with our heads down on our desks. This is a better one. This is a fun one because, as we all know, the Phillies are playing like they're a different team. And that team is good at baseball. It's quite the rebrand. I'm Justin Clue. You can follow me on Twitter at Justin_Clue. With me is Liz Rocher of Yahoo Sports. You can follow her at Liz Rocher. Liz, is it a new day? I mean, this isn't the first time in the past few years the Phillies have strung a bunch of wins together. They still haven't hit the 8-win threshold that they in a row that they hit last year. So why does this feel different than that? We're excited. I'm excited. I'm not going to be one of those people who's like, well, it's luck, or well, the Braves are still doing better. You know, this is fun. This is enjoyable. This feels different.
It definitely does. I mean, everyone seems energized and excited by the exit of Joe Girardi.
Interesting.
Yes. Everyone, it really did, like that first game that they played, it was a week ago Friday, they beat the crap out of the Angels three straight games. And like the win they had a week ago was 10-0. And I don't believe, unless the Angels won last night, they have not won for a while.
Yeah,
and that
I
feels really
check.
Good.
Yeah, as someone pointed out, the Angels' method after their lack of success continued following the firing of Joe Maddon was to all of them start using Nickelback songs as their walk-off music. Meanwhile, the Phillies just keep winning. So we've seen a departure in the Angels-Phillies comparisons. Both of them fired their managers within a couple of days, and both have seen opposite results. So that's been interesting. But to your point, in the 10th game is today, but in the nine days of June, the Phillies have played 7 games. They have won every one of them. Only one of them was Joe Girardi the manager, his last game being June 1st against the Giants when they won 6-5. Liz, as the most vocal anti-Joe Girardi person in the local media, would you say that you saved the Phillies?
Yes. I would 100% say that.
Expand on that.
I'm great and everything I say is correct.
Makes sense.
Yes. I really do think that everyone says like the Phillies problems go deeper than the manager. And like everyone with a brain knows that. Like no one thought that, you know, firing Joe Girardi was going to fix everything. But it had a It had the chance to fix something. Like they are going to lose. They're going to go through more tough times. And now we'll get to see how they deal with that when Joe Girardi isn't around. Because it feels like a rain cloud has been lifted off of everybody. Like, I don't know what it is. You can only assume that it's Joe Girardi. That's the only, like,
that's the thing.
It's changed.
We do know what it is. Yes, we all know what it is, and it's that. Yeah, I mean, what are you going to do? Argue against that? Well, you're going to get swept by the Diamondbacks this weekend. Yeah, I don't know, maybe. But, like, you cannot say that in these 6 games since Girardi has been fired that this team hasn't had, everyone is talking about, this team hasn't had a huge amount of energy, like a huge just turnaround, a completely different looking team out there. As I was saying on Twitter, they are the statistics kind of speak for themselves. In the month of June, it's June 10th. They have yet to play a game today, but it is June 10th. And in the 10 days of June, the Phillies have hit 18 home runs, the same number as the Yankees and Blue Jays for the most in baseball. They have scored 53 runs and in fact outscored their opponents 53-19. That is the fourth most amount of runs scored in Major League Baseball and the third most in the National League. Their 10% walk rating is second in the National League. So they're getting walks as well. They have 155 weighted runs created. That's third in Major League Baseball and the highest in the National League. And then you go over to the pitching staff where they have a team 2.57 ERA in this span, behind only the Braves in the National League. 13 walks allowed, the lowest in Major League Baseball. According to FanGraphs, they have allowed hard hit balls on 26% of pitches, which is a higher amount than only the Rangers, Mets, and Giants. Two of those teams are destined for the playoffs. Oddly enough, they have thrown the second fewest strikes in all of baseball in that span, 635. Only the Tigers have thrown fewer strikes, but they're getting outs. But as we all know, this is more than just the stats. An example of that would be, I think, yesterday's game, where you saw Willy Adames come up for the Brewers, their best hitter, I would say. There was two outs, and I believe a walk, like a double, a single, and a walk had loaded the bases with two outs. So Zach Eflin's in a jam, and the Brewers' best hitter comes to the plate. I mean, we've seen this plenty of times before. A pitcher slowly gets into trouble. He's throwing a lot of pitches, and then the game gets broken a little open. Not even like that wide open, but a little bit open, and the Phillies can't come back. And like that's the game. But in this particular case, Willy Adames checks his swing after a long at bat where he's just fouling off pitches and tiring Eflin out. And then he finally checks his swing, accidentally makes contact, sends a whoops-a-daisy weak little ground ball that Eflin's able to go to his left, pick up, and throw him out. Threat over. No run scored. Later in the game, Didi Gregorius, someone who, I mean, I don't want to speak for everyone, but I would say no one was really hotly anticipating the return of Didi Gregorius.
No, you're right. He could speak for everyone.
He has hit very well since he has come back. And he comes up with a scoring opportunity. He checks his swing, makes whoops-a-daisy contact, sends it to the left side. Brewers can't get to it in time, goes into the outfield, and the Phillies score some runs. So two different accidental check swing contacts, and in one case, it ends a threat. In the other one, it allows the Phillies to keep scoring and expand their lead and add to the 53-run total they have in this seven-game win streak. That's the kind of stuff I'm talking about. Those are the kind of breaks that feels like the Phillies have not been getting for years. For years. And when they've had them, it has not led to sustained success. And I know that there's, I think it's a very small subset, but there's still people out there who want to say, well, they're just getting really lucky, or they're playing some bad teams who are in the middle of some bad stretches. And I, you know, hey, both of those things are true. You can even throw in, yeah, but the Braves aren't losing, so they're not really gaining any ground. The Braves really aren't losing, by the way. This is bizarre. I think the Braves have a similar schedule right now. They are also playing the soft underbelly of baseball as far as competition goes. They're playing the Pirates this weekend, and they've won 8 in a row. So they are doing the exact same thing the Phillies do.
Yeah.
And that is also like not great news.
But
go ahead.
They're still just like, I just looked up their record. They're still 31-27. There's like just like two and a half games between them and the Phillies. Like, granted, the Phillies are still 9 back of the Mets, but the Mets won't be this good all season. They can't be. Like, some of this success, like, I think we were talking about this in our Slack chat yesterday. Like, the Yankees, how are they so good? How have they remained so good? It's mostly just because I think it's a long season and we haven't seen all of it yet.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't think you're going to have your eyes on the division right now. Like, no. That hole's too deep. Maybe we get to that in, like, you know, a month or two from now where the Phillies have, like, close the gap even further between them and the Mets and everything, but that's not what you should be looking at right now. Right now, you got to concentrate on crawling over the Braves, because crawling over the Braves means you've done a lot more than just crawl past the Braves. It means that you've really done yourself some favors in the wild card race. It means that you're just a better team. Like, they need to just look at what's in front of them, and I think that's what they've been pretty much saying, which you could expect, like in interviews and stuff, saying like, we got to just win tomorrow, we got to just win today, like we're just focusing here and now. And as they've been saying, like, they've all been getting along, and Eflin's like, oh yeah, I look forward. We're just happy to be around each other. I look forward to coming in today. And when you think about the best Phillies teams of not even, well, yeah, just like the best Phillies teams of your lifetime, that's always been the vibe.
Yeah.
Like, there has always been a sense of camaraderie and stuff in the Phillies locker room and chemistry and everything. And so that's a huge part of this as well. And obviously winning puts everybody in a good mood, but you know, chicken or egg, whatever, those two things are feeding off each other. That they're enjoying playing together and being together, and that they're winning. It's a, you know, it creates a cycle, and that's how you get a win streak. And like I said, some people pin that to luck, and some of it is luck. But you know what? If the Phillies had a pool of luck that they could choose to use as they saw fit, like, you know, an amount of luck they could pull from to distribute the whole season. You know, oh, we got a tough series coming up. Let's take a few, like, handfuls and sprinkle it around the locker room. Or like, oh, we're playing the Mets today. Let's just, like, dump this on the starter. Even if they could disperse their luck at their choice, like, wouldn't they be doing that now? Well, what if they need it later? There's not going to be a later if they don't get lucky now. You got to stack up the wins as much as you can. So it doesn't really they're also hitting the shit out of the ball and like playing good baseball. But like when they get lucky, that's also just, you know, that doesn't bother me if they have a few wins that are just pure luck. That doesn't bother me at all. Like just get the wins. I don't care how they happen. I hope that they keep happening because the offense looks dominant. Two of these 7 wins are 10-0 wins. Like that's the offense. That's the Phillies you want to see. But if they're getting lucky too, That doesn't bother me at all. They should be getting lucky. They're due.
Yeah, that's entirely true. I mean, you're totally right. This is the best time to use it. Like, people say, you know, like, the games late this season, you know, matter more than the early ones. In a way, that's true, because there's so much more of the season to go. But it's not like you can explicitly control what happens when. And the Phillies definitely needed some of it right now. It wasn't even just they were doing badly. They seemed demoralized and deeply unhappy with where they were and what they were doing. And unfortunately, none of that was going to change unless the manager changed. And I'm so thrilled that happened. Like, I don't dislike Joe Girardi personally, I guess. I don't know him.
Really?
I don't know him.
See, I find that surprising. Okay,
he's an Italian ahead. Catholic, so he reminds me of everyone I'm related to. So, but
it's funny when that happens and you feel like you can talk to or about someone as if they are actually someone like that, when they remind you so much of someone or a group of people you know personally, but yeah. You don't know them personally. And you're just like, yeah, I'm going to talk to you like we know each other. It's like, we do not know each other.
No.
This is an attack.
Yes, absolutely. Like, I'm not happy. Like, I'm not happy that he was fired. I am happy that something has changed. Like, it's not that I wanted him to be fired because it's personally damaging to him. It was something that I thought would be good for the team, you know? And
backpedaling. Yeah.
Absolutely backpedaling. I did, wish personal hardship on Joe Girardi.
We were all in the Slack channel, Liz. We all saw the incredible 12-paragraph rant you went in, full of expletives, full of personal threats, full of just wishes of the bane of whatever god he believed in coming down, just bringing the hammer down on him like Job. It is, you can't move the goalpost now, Liz. Like, don't try to do it. This is such a ham-fisted, transparent attempt to cleanse yourself of any guilt. And frankly, I think it's shameful.
You're joking, but it's entirely possible that I could have done that, because I was full of vitriol. You know, and I might be back. But, like, I never wished bad things personally on Joe Girardi, but, like, he wasn't doing his job well. He just wasn't, and I didn't find that acceptable.
And I think most people would agree with you.
Yeah.
Something to point out here, they're doing all of this without Gene Segura, who was one of two anchors of the offense in the weeks leading up to this. So that's a huge deal as well. I mean, that's how this offense is supposed to function. Chris and I were talking on Absolutely Hammered during a game about how little Rhys Hoskins has been able to contribute to all of this success. As we were having this discussion, Rhys Hoskins hit a home run and had a good game against the Brewers. So, but like, my point was, yes, you can come after Rhys for not producing as much, because, you know, you want to see more from Rhys. Everyone always wants to see more from Rhys. We all know how his typical output goes season to season. You don't get a whole lot of comprehensive success from beginning to end. You just get some spurts throughout the season that hopefully happen when you need them most. But at the same time, he should be able to operate like that with a lineup like this around him. You know, like, he should, okay, when it's his turn to carry the offense or contribute in a big way to the offense for, like, you know, a week or so, he can do that. But when he's struggling, he should be able to struggle, and this offense should be able to pick him up. I'm not blaming the rest of the offense for it. Obviously, in general, the fix here is you just want to see more prolonged success from Rhys at the plate rather than the style we've come to accept from him. But we've also made the comparison that he could serve more in a Pat Burrell role than a Ryan Howard role. Not so much central to the offense, but supplemental to it. Somebody who you can't always rely on to get, like, to make the solid contact, but maybe you do rely on to have a timely home run or just get on base. You know, that's what Rhys is good at.
Yeah.
And I feel like this offense is starting to operate in a way that allows for some of its key members to not have a great week, but the team can still win. Like, this was never meant to be a one-man, two-man show the way it was with Bryce and Gene Segura leading up to this. And I feel like you're finally seeing all of this kind of happen at once. Castellanos is still not, I think, performing at the level that he was signed to play at. But again, it doesn't matter, because they keep winning and they keep finding ways to score. And sometimes that's through sheer brunt force, and sometimes that's through whoops-a-daisy that got through the infield and a run came in.
Yeah. Exactly. I was just looking, like, I hadn't realized, like, I knew that Jean Segura was out, but I hadn't quite realized that that was, you know, that was definitely going to depress the offense. And I'm happy that it hasn't, largely, you know? I mean, I think it did at the beginning, but everyone seems to be doing better now. Harper is still the best hitter on the team by far.
My God, he has the highest batting average, or I'm sorry, the highest slugging percentage in all of baseball in the month of June at .637.
I know, like, it's, none of us expected him to have another season, like the last season.
Especially when they were like, oh, his elbow's falling off or whatever, UCL issues, blah, blah, blah.
But yeah, it's super nice that he is doing exactly what they signed him to do. This is what he was supposed to be doing, and it's cool that he's doing just that. I know that sounds stupid, but, you know, it is cool. Oh, how did I miss that Zach Wheeler went on the IL? How did I miss that?
Well, he isn't, he, his is related to the paternity.
Oh, yes. So now I remember. Because I'm just looking at the, like, the 2022 Phillies team profile on Baseball Reference and just, like, sifting through and, you know, Aaron Nola has had some really great starts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Aaron Nola's looked great. I mean, that's why I'm sticking to my, he needs to have a solid first half for me to believe. But, like, this is, we're on our way to that. Yeah. I can't backpedal out of that. I'm not like lose, but I can't backpedal out of a previously made statement. But, you know, if you're someone who's rooting for him to have a great first half, he's having a great first half. We're just not at the end of it yet. You know, we're about a month away from the end of the first half, and he's doing it. I mean, that was a tremendous start yesterday. You know, he hasn't always been lights out, but he's pretty damn close. He's given you exactly what you want from a number two starter. You know, he's finally, it's been a wonky couple of years, but he has had a couple of really solid starts. Not just a couple, like a bunch of really solid starts. In a row. Most recently against the Brewers yesterday, he went 8 innings, allowed no runs and only 4 hits. I mean, that's, when someone said vintage Aaron Nola, I was like, oh my God, he's been around long enough. We can say things like vintage Aaron Nola.
I mean, he's,
that's messed up.
Yeah, that is messed up. I mean, he's still doing, at least since May. No, I mean, since like the end of April, he's still doing the, I have a great start, then I have a less than great start. I have a great start, then I give up 5 runs. I give up just 2, and then I'm going to give up 4 and only make it to the 6th. Like, it's like that, because the start before the one on Thursday, this is Friday, so Wednesday, I think, you know, he gave up 5 runs in 6 innings. But the one before that, he pitched into the 9th and gave up just 1. And yesterday, he went through the 8th and gave up no runs. Like, I don't love the pattern, but I do like that it exists. You know?
Yeah.
Like, I don't like that it's happening, but at least, like, we are seeing the version of Aaron Nola that we want to see.
And, I mean, look at the opponents he's facing. You're saying every other start, he's faced the Mets 3 times.
Yeah.
And the first time, he got absolutely crushed and only made it into the 4th inning. Mm-hmm. And then the next 2 times, he made it in the 6th and 7th innings. So, like, he's improved as he's faced them more times. His last start against the Mets, he allowed 1 earned run in 7 innings. Like, that's very good. That's what you want to see from Aaron Nola. He pitched against the Dodgers, the best team in the National League, twice in a row in May. And he went deep into his first start, allowed only 2 runs, struck out 8, 2 walks. Second start, made it into the 6th, but allowed 2 home runs and, you know, didn't look quite as sharp. But, you know, that's again, you're facing the best team in baseball. You want your number 2 starter to look, you know, to have a chance against them. And he had a chance against them after he did so well after his first start. Then he went against the Braves, like you said, went into the 9th inning against the Braves, went into the 8th inning against the Brewers. I mean, these are some of the best teams in the National League he's going up against, and he's not, you know, he's not getting slapped around from the word go. He's actually, he's putting together strong, deep starts. It's exactly what the Phillies need. You know, yes. You want to be able to rely on Zach Wheeler, your number 1. They can do that. I feel like they can rely on Aaron Nola to pitch a deep game. Zach Eflin has some absurd numbers. Even Ranger Suarez in his last start looked pretty solid. So rotation hasn't been a concern of mine for a little while now. Like, it really hasn't. And it's especially interesting given that the Phillies are moving some pieces around in the minor leagues as well, including Andrew Painter, getting promoted. There's talk of what Mark Appel's doing in the minor leagues, and he might finally get his big shot. Phillies acquired Michael Plassmayer from the Giants in exchange for one of their young catchers. You know, they're starting to address things as well. Like, so those things are largely pitching because the offense is really clicking. But I feel like Girardi's firing kicked off a flurry of activity, not all of it like huge blockbuster news, but showing you that the team understands, like, okay, it's been 2 months. We know what we have in 2022, or we need to like react as though this is what the team is. Let's improve it in the areas where it could stand to be improved. And I feel like they're addressing these things one at a time, starting with Girardi. Hopefully you see something get addressed in the back end of the bullpen. You know, maybe just give Sir Anthony a few chances to close a few times. I don't think anybody's going to call you crazy for that. And I don't know how exactly you would address Rhys Hoskins, but at this point, he's, you know, like I said, me and Chris started talking about him and suddenly he started hitting the ball. So I'm not sure that's even the Phillies consider that an issue, but I feel like this team is starting to address its problems and also just, you know, looking and feeling better. Liz, who would you say is your favorite Philly at the moment?
That's a super good question. I'm going to go with, is it cheating to say Zach Wheeler?
I mean, it's not cheating to say anybody. He's on the Phillies, so he qualifies.
Like, I do want Gene Segura to come back soon and experience what it is like to play on a team that's not managed by Joe Girardi. I would like that for him because he really seemed to be getting in the groove before, of course he hurt himself. So he would have been my favorite, but I'll say it's Zach Wheeler. He's looked really great this year. It's been such a surprise. And I say that only because, again, who expects your Cy Young winning pitcher to repeat? Like, those days are over, at least for me. Like, I don't expect anything of anybody when the season starts anymore. So I guess he would be my favorite pitcher. And as far as hitter, I mean, it's got to be Bryce Harper. He's been hitting the cover off the ball.
Well, I think there's plenty of options here. Bryce Harper is like the obvious one, and he's the star of the show. Yeah. He has just utterly crushed pitching and just been a huge engine for the offense. But it's also been really good to see Kyle Schwarber start a really great month of June.
Yes.
He has knocked the crap out of the ball. He's slugging right up there, you know, among the team's best players with Harper. You know, Didi coming back and being able to contribute in some key moments. He has like two triples and a double since he's come back in like four games. I mean, that's huge. Bryson Stott looking like hitting like he's a major leaguer. Like that's been super encouraging. Bohm's been able to contribute in little ways. Hoskins is able to get the bat on the ball. You know, he's still waiting for Castellanos to really break out and, you know, crawl out of this slump. I'd like to talk about Garrett Stubbs.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about him. Oh, and I do want to say, in the month of June, Schwarber is hitting .357.
Yeah, yeah.
He's raised his batting average from under 200, you know, in the 185 range, all the way up to 209. Like, that's a big thing. That's a long way to go, and I'm thrilled that he's done it. And hopefully, he only gets better because the world only needs one Adam Dunn, and he retired. So,
since the start of May, Garrett Stubbs has the third highest slugging percentage on the Phillies. Now, is that fair in that he has only played in seven games and had 25 plate appearances?
Since the beginning of May.
Absolutely not. Because in this metric, Matt Vierling has the highest slugging percentage on the Phillies. He's also played in a very limited amount of games in that span. Stubbs is, I don't even have that much to say about him other than he is a burst of energy. It is great to see a backup catcher who's able to contribute. I really don't mean to slap down Andrew Knapp when I'm saying that. There was an area that like was in need of being addressed, but was so, I feel like, far down the list that it was just like, why we may not get to this when we're trying to fix like fundamental issues with the Phillies at their core in their player development department. Like, we're trying to deal with that kind of stuff first. The backup catcher doesn't come through in the clutch enough was not high on the list of priorities.
Nope.
But here we are with a catcher who's just a ball of energy, who is extremely likable. He was a hype man in Houston. And I know that he was a fan favorite there as well. An Astros site, I think, just interviewed him. I think it's called like the Juice Box. Yeah, the Juice Box Journal, I found. And there was a quote from him on that site that said, "When I first got traded to the Phillies, I didn't know if I should be excited about the new opportunity I was going to have with a new ball club or sad for the end of a chapter that has molded my professional career. Since leaving Houston, there's no doubt I've missed the players and staff that I've developed relations with over the years, but the locker room with the Phillies and the opportunity I've had over here as a player has been everything I could ask for. It has been a ton of fun getting to know the guys and to be on another team with sights on the playoffs and more. Can't wait to see what the rest of this year brings." So, like, aww. You know, it's nothing out of the ordinary. It's nothing you wouldn't expect, but
it's nice.
You know, it's nice. It's nice to hear. And I feel like if things weren't good in the clubhouse, you'd just say nothing. You know, you wouldn't necessarily say, "Well, the guys all hate each other and someone threw a knife at my head the other day." But like, you know,
he would just say, "You know, everything is fine. You know, everyone gets along. You know, it's a good atmosphere." But no, he just sort of, you know, elaborated in a way that you know it's true.
Mm-hmm. "We're just focusing on winning. You know, next game, one game at a time. You know, giving it our all. Blah blah blah." You wouldn't hear. You would just hear normal stuff. And yeah, it's funny. Like Knapp was also a hype man. He was also very excitable in the dugout and everything. He just didn't have as many things to be excited about.
Yeah.
And he just sadly wasn't able to contribute as much as Stubbs has been able to, who, again, since the beginning of May, in only 7 games, has hit 2 home runs. I mean, that's a big deal. I know it doesn't sound like a big deal, but it's one of those little things that helps create the bigger things. You know, these are the types of things, like getting a solid season from your backup catcher is something no one will remember when Bryce Harper like wins another MVP and Kyle Schwarber goes ham in September and like carries them into the playoffs. You know, when stuff like that happens, you're obviously going to remember that, but little things like your backup catcher being able to contribute when asked, that's what propels you. That's like creates this foundation of success. And we all know that, you know, we all know that Pat Gillick acquiring guys like Jason Wirth and Shane Victorino wound up paying off big dividends. And Garrett Stubbs is likable enough and clearly able enough to be that kind of player for this team. So again, it's exciting. That's part of what's creating this vibe, I think, is that you're seeing guys in those roles come up and really, you know, come through. Like Didi, you know, I keep mentioning him because it was like, I totally was not thinking about Didi Gregorius. I had no idea what his timeline was to come back. I was just not thinking about it at all. And he's really been able to put the bat on the ball since he's come back. I mean, that's another big deal. You're starting to hear people describe the lineup as like a threat from 1 to 9. And that's probably not necessary. That's not exactly true, but it's still nice to hear that that's the perception right now, that everyone has, you know, even if they're not setting the world on fire, has managed to come through in a spot for this team.
Yeah, like I was just looking at Bryson Stott and he's still under 200, but in the month of June, he's hitting .346. In the 7 games and 29 plate appearances he has, he's hit 3 home runs, a double. He's walked 3 times and just 5 strikeouts. That's pretty good. I'm pretty happy with that. Like that is.
He's certainly not looking lost, which you know, has been an issue for young Phillies hitters.
Exactly. I mean, he hit his lowest point of the season at the very end of May. May 29th, he was hitting .114. And now he is getting ever closer to surpassing the Mendoza line. And we should congratulate him on that. Like, truly, because it's hard to dig yourself out of that hole when you're so far down. Like, your sights are set on, like, what, 250, something like that? Like, at the, you know, when you're a young player, I mean, I have no idea. Maybe you want to, you know, hit the ball into the stratosphere. But, like, if your expectations are realistic, you're like, all right, I just need to be average. I need something to grow. I need something to provide a foundation. And he was so far away from that. And so it's nice to see him playing every day and doing well. Wow. What? I mean, who would have thunk?
Well, as much as I'm talking about the Phillies, I did want to just hit on the Braves real quick, just because that is the more the Phillies win, the more like what those wins are doing is going to become the conversation, and what they're doing currently is trying to get past the Braves, and the Braves just keep winning. Startlingly enough, I mean, again, in this span, in the month of June, Bryce Harper has a .1043 slugging percentage.
Good Lord. That's,
yeah, that's not even his OPS. No. That's just the slugging. Yikes. But also, yeah, second in the National League A guy named Jack Sawinski on the Pirates.
Who?
Yeah, I have no idea who that is. He's played in as many games and has like around the same amount of plate appearances as Bryce. That's insane. Kyle Schwarber is number three. He's slugging 893. And then there's like two Braves in Adam Duvall and Ronald Acuna this month, as Duvall is apparently figuring things out at the plate after having a real shitty start to the season. And Acuna is, of course, back from injury, and he's just obliterating the ball. So that's terrifying. Bryson Stott, eighth in the National League in slugging percentage in the month of June so far, 731. So the Phillies have three players in the top 10 of slugging percentage in the National League in the month of June. The Braves have two. And, you know, this is part of why you're seeing the Phillies not being able to move past them, because they're catching on as well. And I think they're benefiting from their schedule as well. And a lot of their hitters, they have like five or six guys that have really, I think, turned it on in the past couple weeks. And it's been absolutely monstrous. So, Liz, who are you more worried about right now? You know, having to play the Mets a bunch more times, who have apparently just run away with the division so far and have shown no signs of stopping, and have a bunch of guys who you could consider legitimate all-stars going into the all-star voting, or the Braves, who are just starting to like come alive and look just as threatening as the Phillies. I mean, are we on the verge of seeing the kind of NL East we talked about seeing 2 years ago?
Oh, God, I hope not. I think I'm definitely more scared of the Braves. I still have faith that the Mets will Mets it up somehow. Mm. I do. Like, maybe not as intensely as they have in previous years, because, like, they've lost guys, important guys, and they're still doing this, which is really frustrating to see. But, like, they're so far ahead at this point, I just care about getting past the Braves. You know, and once that happens, if the Phillies can do that and build a lead of even just, like, three games, then they can sort of focus on, all right, who's the next one we have to take down? And it's the Mets. Like, don't go too big too fast. You don't want to face the enormous, you know, giant robot monster. You want to face the slightly smaller one first.
Yeah, that's fair enough. And I feel like you're saying, I feel like the Mets are more likely to come crashing down to earth at some point. But the Braves, as they showed last year, I mean, I'm a little scarred from how average the Braves looked to how monstrous they became in the second half and ultimately winning the World Series. Did that scar you at all,
yes,
knowing that like they have something like that in them, that's possible, that there's precedent for it?
And now they're just even better somehow.
Yeah.
Like, that's really frustrating. They got rid of Freddie Freeman and just like, we're going to pick up this other guy who is, you know, also very good. And we're going to get this other guy back who didn't play really at all last year. Like, that's really annoying. And it is scary because they do have that in them. But, like, this is the first time I feel the Phillies actually have that ability, too. Like, they've shown that in the past, you know, in every game they've played in June. They have the ability to do what they're supposed to do, which is hit a lot of runs. They're supposed to hit a lot of balls and score a lot of runs. Like, there's one game in this whole string that they scored less than 7 runs, and it was a 3-2 win. And that's exactly how it should be. Like, if the pitching is keeping you afloat, you know, the hitters don't always have to mash the ball out of the park. They do just have to keep ahead. Like, and that's, I always say, like, when a pitcher gives up 3 runs or something, that is not an insurmountable, that's not an insurmountable deficit. Like, that's something that can
certainly
be easily accomplished to win the game. And that should be happening. And that's what happened here. They did just enough to win. And that's all that matters, as long as they win.
No, I completely agree. And yeah, it's just the Phillies still have a lot of challenges in front of them, but they weren't going to have a chance at taking on the Braves or the Mets, regardless of what their schedule was this month and leading up to the All-Star break, if they didn't start winning now. And they're doing that. They're doing that in exactly the way they're built to do it. And they're doing it because they're getting a little lucky. They put the ball in play, but I don't even think that's that big of a part of it. I really think this team has just been dominating some really good pitchers. You know, I know that you have the argument of, well, they're just playing teams that are in a bad way right now. You still got to beat those teams. You still got to win those games. And frankly, we've seen this team be the harbinger for change for struggling teams so many times in the past few years. That's been one of the most irritating things about these Phillies teams, is that other teams have had so much fun playing them and like getting back on track, playing the Phillies and sweeping the Phillies in their own stadium. They are so often just like that beacon of hope for other teams. And now the Phillies are doing that to other people. You can't say, well, they're just getting, you know, they're just playing bad teams. They still have to win those games. They have to win games. They have to beat the bad teams as much as they have to beat the good teams.
Well, go ahead. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, that's why like the next 10 days is super important, because mm-hmm. they're playing all terrible teams, and all terrible teams that they lost to last year. They're playing the Diamondbacks. That's the next series to start, and they got swept by them once last year. That was embarrassing. Mm-hmm. They played three games against the Marlins after that. The Phillies can never win against the Marlins. I would like them to win two of those games. I don't think that's too much to ask. And then they play the Nationals, who are, I think, one of the two or three worst teams in the entirety of baseball. And if they can't beat the Nats, like, that's frustrating. Like, they have this great string of wins, but they have to keep some of this pace going, because these are the teams they have to beat. These should be the easy wins for them, because all of these teams are not good.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the Marlins. Were they supposed to be down bad in that, like, they had a team meeting, but Don Mattingly's like, it was not like a rah-rah team meeting. Like, everybody spoke. It was a real bummer. And he was literally like, oh, I wouldn't be surprised if we came out flat tonight because of this meeting.
Yeah,
I think
it was personal,
they did win.
They said there was like personal issues, which is like, wow.
And that was the night that Jazz Chisholm came out and hit a grand slam. So they weren't exactly flat. They actually won 12-2. And of course, then John Heyman framed it in the New York Post, saying that, he got them together for a meeting. Mattingly did at just the right time, inspiring perhaps their best game of the year. They are starting to win now. They have strung a few wins together. But the Marlins are a team that the Phillies should beat. And I've really just put aside all that, like, oh, but last year, oh, they lose to bad teams. I don't know. This team, I don't know if this team does. You know,
yeah.
not the new version of it. I don't think this team does automatically lose to bad teams or automatically get no hit by first time like pitchers and guys making their major league debuts and everything. I don't know if this is that team anymore.
Yeah.
That's how different this team feels.
Well, and I'll say, just to correct myself, the Phillies and the Diamondbacks have almost identical records. Like and they're both almost the same amount of games out of first in their division. But you know, and the Marlins are only two games behind the Phillies right now. But those are beatable teams. Like, those are beatable. They're still beatable teams. And the Phillies are supposed to be better than them. Like, their record is supposed to look better than it does now. They're one game within 500, which is, at, you know, 2 weeks ago was unimaginable. Excuse me. But, like, they have what it takes to beat these teams and actually show that, yes, we are better than all of you. We are actually better than all of you, even though our record doesn't quite show it right now.
Yeah. Well, it's been great to see, and hopefully this is another successful weekend for the Phillies. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about some stuff around the league. No Mason Jar this week. We simply just ran out of time, and frankly, it's just more fun to talk about the success of the team than dwell on the failures of the past by talking about guys who pitched, you know, three or four games. We can save that for another week. We'll definitely get back to it, but yeah, we're skipping the Mason Jar this week, and just to talk about the Phillies' good vibes. We'll be right back after this. Well, Liz, you mentioned the Nationals and how much they suck, and they do suck. They are real bad. They are shit. One of the reasons they're shit is Patrick Corbin, who sucks. And I just thought I'd share this morning. He's got like a 6.71 ERA. He's just getting his ass kicked. Left-handed hitters are hitting .352 against him.
Oh my God.
Dan Steinberg, DC Sports Bog, longtime coverer and blogger and I'll say humorist of Washington, D.C. sports, tweeted out showing off some of the tweets that Patrick Corbin has liked very recently. He liked a Clay Travis tweet, which is already about the Rays players refusing to wear their pride flags. And he also liked a tweet that was celebrating Jack Del Rio for his comments, calling the January 6th storming of the Capitol a dust up at the Capitol, and asking why, you know, people who rioted as a part of Black Lives Matters aren't being held to the same level as those who, you know, again, stormed the Capitol on January 6th. Lot to unpack here, but mostly these are the kind of things that Patrick Corbin, he wants, that he likes. They literally, that he liked them. And, yeah, I don't know, Liz, I just, how badly do you wish the Phillies rotation, which has been pretty successful, had Patrick Corbin on it, as they had actively sought to get him as a part of this rotation in the past few years? Honestly, probably wouldn't be culturally too bad of a fit for a lot of this clubhouse.
Yeah, that's entirely 100% true. My God. Oh, God. Just can't think about that. I can't, like, if I think about that for too long, I'm like, why do I like this team? Why am I paying attention to them so much? I just have to forget that a lot of them are kind of right-wing nut jobs.
I mean, you definitely got a lot of responses from this from people who are like, oh, wow, you're chastising him just simply for what he believes. You know, the obvious thing.
Shut your face.
Well, what he believes in are, you know, the marginalization of people who aren't like him, if he's liking those tweets and liking the commentary behind them.
There's not two sides to every issue. There is a right and a wrong. And just because you're liking the wrong part doesn't mean anyone has to care or that it's a valuable point. So shut it. All of those
people. My question is, you know, as I said, we have through like credible knowledge that like, yeah, this he might not be such a bad fit culturally to the current Phillies. And I guess, you know, part of the response to Steinberg's tweet was like, I just wish like I didn't know this stuff about athletes. And, you know, I find myself thinking kind of the same thing, you know, in past couple years, you know, largely. But, you know, you hear something, you hear a player say something, you learn, you know, guys think a certain way and it's like awful. And we're never going to have a day where you, and we say align politically, but it goes beyond politics, just align like ethically or like with just decency towards other human beings. Would you rather not know what the athletes on the Phillies, where they stand on stuff like this, so that you don't have to be conflicted about it? Or would you rather know about it and like just address it frequently and just try to come to terms with being a fan of a team where you know these beliefs are in the locker room?
I think it's that. I not knowing, I would always wonder. And I guess you could say that it would be, for me, it would kind of be worse, because then you have expectations of who they are off the field. And I just don't know if I'd be comfortable with that. I think I would be weirdly kind of more conflicted in a way, at least internally. Externally, it would probably be fine. But like, at least knowing about it allows me to have a full picture of who they are and to be able to unplug from them without guilt occasionally. Because like, yeah, they're doing, which I did during their, you know, the last, before, you know, June, the long, dark trudge. It was easy to unplug from them because I like them all as baseball players. And that's where it stops for most of them. Like, I think there are a handful of guys who are not crazy in that way. But I think a decent number of them are. And it makes it easier for me to be like, all right, I don't have to feel bad that I'm not watching these people that I agree with play baseball. I can just remember that they're who they are and be like, yeah, I don't have to watch them tonight if I don't want to.
I've had this thought recently. I guess it's mostly been this season, as like my take on fandom and who you support and how you support them and why. You know, it's just all these thoughts are always swirling around in my head. And I really came to one of the conclusions I came to was just that the Phillies are a part of my identity, but I am not a part of theirs.
Yeah.
And when I say the Phillies, I just mean just this giant, vast, far reaching idea of the Phillies. Like, you know, not even like the franchise or the organization, but just like their presence in my life and like my perception of them in that way. Is what I like support, and that's what I follow, mm-hmm. and the community that it's created, and I try not to, you know, I've just become, I'm not saying this is how everyone should think, but it'll be probably I'm like an adult now, you know.
Yeah.
I'm not somebody who's going to be like, this guy is the greatest guy in the world and nothing can convince me otherwise. I don't care if there's evidence that he's done something horrible. I'm going to ignore that or play it down and just go on thinking that he's great. Like, I can't do that anymore. And part of me does wish that, like, social media hadn't opened this door where you know so much more about people based on what they just put out there or what they like the trail you can follow to just see what they support. And it's again, this isn't about just disagreeing with someone on political issues, because again, these aren't like, you know, it goes beyond political. That's just not, that word just doesn't mean anything anymore in the way people use it. But I guess what I'm saying is I'm never going to be so much of a zealot that I'll keep supporting somebody because an individual. Supporting the Phillies is more about supporting myself than supporting the team.
Yeah.
You know, they're just so ingrained in who I am that I'm going to turn the game on and watch. Maybe if things get bad enough, I stop doing that on this front. But I feel like that's where I'm at, because like they're a part of my life. I'm not a part of theirs. That's kind of the way I go about it. And, you know, I don't know. Maybe there'll be another conclusion reached in a couple of months or next year. But this kind of shit's out there, as Steinberg pointed out with Corbin. And, you know, it's stuff you if you're really an insightful, honest sports fan, then like you got to come to terms with that. Yeah. I know a lot of people just choose not to address it and whatever. You know, that's your business.
To find a way to deal with it.
Yeah,
you know, a lot of people do. Whatever. Like, there's like one good baseball player in that way who's publicly like that, and it's Sean Doolittle, who actually spoke about baseball labor issues and like talked about a lot of stuff that I didn't know about at a DSA baseball. There's a DSA baseball caucus, and he's a member, and he spent like a half an hour talking to us about the whole process that they went through and what it was like and how they all dealt with it. And it was really cool. Excuse me. And there's like, it's nice to know that there's a guy like that out there who at least can serve as a counterpoint. Like, yes, I can fully like this baseball player and not feel guilty. Like, I have suspicions about Max Scherzer, his wife. And this is public donation information. His wife made a donation to the limit for Bernie back in 2016, I think. And that was really cool to find out. Like, there are people around, and I think a lot of them just don't feel like they can publicly be that way because the culture in baseball is so towards the right just because of where all the players come from. Like, it's warmer in the South all year round. They're able to play baseball all year round. And that is historically a place where there is a lot of, you know, conservative religious stuff. And so that has made its way. And that's sort of like the predominant sort of political leaning in baseball. And so it's nice that there's like one or two guys that I can be like, all right, I can like this guy and not have to, you know, swear not to get his jersey because I don't want to have his name on my back.
Yeah, but I also, you know, again, this isn't about left versus right. It's about hate versus not hate.
Completely.
There's also something wrinkles my brain about the idea of being like, well, this guy is a good guy and this guy is a bad guy because of like the politicians they support. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know what you're saying, and I don't totally disagree with you, but like, just those broad sweep, like, oh, we can like this guy because he gave money to this guy. I mean, politicians, I have the same exact attitude about. So.
Oh yeah, true. I mean, but like, to me, giving to Bernie is a big deal because he's pretty much the closest thing we have to like a socialist as an elected official. So that, to me, that's a meaningful thing, and. But I do completely understand what you're saying. I mean, I'm just searching for lifelines on a on a team that is stuffed to the brim with guys who are very careful. A lot of them are very careful about their public image to the point where they're hiding something.
Oh, yeah. Well, in any case, before we get too political, let's close up shop here with a topic that John Stolness fed me a couple weeks ago that we didn't get to. But I believe it was a website called betonline.ag, whatever. They apparently analyzed, and this was from a press release that John forwarded to me. They apparently analyzed thousands of tweets from opening day until May 31st. Tracking which MLB players have the most negative posts written about them to determine who is the most hated player in Major League Baseball these days.
So scientific and exact, I can't wait.
For example, this is from the press release, by the way, literally verbatim. For example, tweets with phrases such as, I hate Bryce Harper, Bryce Harper sucks, Bryce Harper is overrated, I can't stand Bryce Harper is the worst, fuck Bryce Harper and others were tracked for the study. I love that Bryce Harper's the example they use. That's so funny. Obviously. He is not, by the way, the most hated player, even though he is the example. Those queries were repeated for dozens of other players by using trend software with direct access to Twitter data. In somewhat of an upset, Bryce Harper was not, like I said, not the top one. Do you want to guess who the most hated player was using these metrics?
That's a super good question. There aren't like a...
I don't think you're going to get it.
No, I don't.
Because
either.
It's not somebody who's done anything, I feel, recently to really garner this. I think it's just a lot of long-standing disgust with this player from people who... And this is probably a little bit of a hint, but people who are stodgy, people who play against him a lot. And, you know, this guy has done some shit that is just, like, not good. So, like, but it's always been, like, on the field stuff. So, I don't know. I'm curious. See if you can guess it. I'll give you, you're going to get three guesses. Go ahead.
Oh, God. Is it Rougned Odor?
It is not. What a choice. I don't think he's even on this list.
Probably not. And I was just thinking, like, he's done some stuff on the field that is bad. And, like, immediately I'm like, Rougned Odor punched a dude in the face.
You know, people love that, though. It's said to be the first time a punch actually landed in a baseball brawl.
And I believe that is entirely true. Baseball fights are known for being lots of slapping and pushing.
You don't have to send me grainy footage from the 70s of, like, an absolute fatality on the baseball field. Or, like, Nolan Ryan punching Robin Ventura. Like, I know that it's not literally the first time. But still, it's a rare occasion. But no, not Rougned Odor.
Man, I'm drawing, like, a blank. I need, like, a list of baseball players now. Like, I remember everyone who's on the Phillies for the most part. I do keep forgetting that Garrett Stubbs is on the Phillies. Because when you mentioned him earlier, I'm like, he's not on Onoadius. He's definitely on the Phillies. No, everybody loves Freddie Freeman. I just hate him. Is it Aaron Judge?
It is not Aaron Judge.
I'm probably so far away from it.
I'm not sure. Oh, Aaron Judge is on the list, obviously, because as much as people love him in New York, you know, people hate the Yankees and they have to play him and everything. But yeah, he may not even be in the top 10, even though he's on this list. All right, you got one more guess.
Oh, God. Is it a player who's, like, actually good? Or is it a player who's just...
Oh, yeah.
Poker? Okay.
Oh, he's good. Probably on a team you don't watch a whole lot.
Okay. Like, the next name that popped into my head was Justin Turner, which makes no sense.
Justin Turner also on the list.
Oh, hey, at least there's that.
Not number one. I believe he's like 26th out of the 30 names they have on this list. But no, not Justin Turner.
Is it Randy Arozarena?
It is not. He is not on the list.
Yeah.
And that's four guesses. So now you're once again breaking the rules.
Sorry.
The most hated player in baseball, according to, you know, betonline.ag that put this list together, Manny Machado of the Padres.
I wouldn't have guessed him in a million years.
Yeah, he's. I mean, I know recently he had another, like, on-field screaming thing, but, like, I don't know. He just hasn't really done, like, you know, that he threw, like, a bat at somebody pretending it slipped out of his hands, but, like, clearly threw the bat. Yeah, stuff like that. I feel like if that has happened recently, it has not gotten as much coverage. But he was the umpires were so scared of him because when he was, like, throwing his helmet, it accidentally bounced and grazed an umpire. And the umpire was like, "Oh my God." And they were like, "You have to suspend him forever. He attacked an umpire." And then, like, a couple weeks later, Rob Drake was like, "I'm going to kill all the liberals with an assault rifle if Trump is impeached." And the umpires were like, "He is just expressing his views. It is very okay. Everything is normal over here in umpire world." That was hilarious. But yeah, Machado, the most hated player according to these metrics. Jose Altuve, number two.
Oh, yeah, I hate that guy.
That makes sense. Yeah, definitely. That makes sense. But again, another guy I really feel like I haven't heard much from or about this year. Bryce Harper is number three. He hit 1220 in their metrics. That's the third. Altuve had 1323. Manny had 1572. Those are the only three guys with over with four digit scores in this metric. Running down the list, Max Scherzer is fourth. Carlos Correa is fifth. Trevor Bauer is sixth. That's who I thought you were.
Oh, my God. He's not playing. He's out of my brain.
Yeah. That's the thing. Is he in baseball since he is suspended for 2 years? Yeah, he is sixth. But I feel like I don't know. Do you feel like he has as many Wiener supporters as he does haters? Or at this point, he has his detractors far outweigh the like subset of little like, I like how he says what he's thinking or whatever the fuck they like about him.
The problem is that those people, his fans and defenders, are like super intense about it, and like one of them equals like three normal people.
Yeah, they're like Elon Musk supporters. He'll never do anything wrong, even though he's clearly done many things wrong. Further down the list, Aroldis Chapman, Mike Trout coming in the top 10, which is hilarious. That's just
literally
rude.
The Ronald nicest Acuna, dude in baseball.
So quiet. Same with DeGrom, who's after Acuna, who's after Trout. But Acuna is the kind of player that, like, I love Ronald Acuna. Of course, people are going to hate him. That's part of what he's supposed to do.
Yeah.
He's supposed to be so good and, like, you know, celebratory and fun that when you're playing against him, you have a really shitty time, which I do every time.
Yep.
Josh Donaldson coming in at number 11 outside the top 10. He and Aaron Judge take the 11 and 12 spots. Poor Juan Soto on the shitty old Nationals at 13. And Odubel Herrera comes in at 14. He's the only other Philly on the list other than Bryce Harper. Yeah, so I think you
see a
lot of like polarizing guys. You also see some guys who really don't deserve to be hated, but I think other people just hate playing against. Like Freddie Freeman is on this list. So is Shohei Ohtani. Like I said, Trout, Mookie Betts, Giancarlo Stanton, Vlad Jr. I mean, like, these are not unlikable guys by any stretch. It just sucks
it
to play against
to
them.
It's painful to play them, yeah.
Yeah, and some of them are like, it sucks to play against me, and I'm not afraid to, like, fist bump when I'm going around the bases. And some guys are just, like, shitty dudes.
Yeah, some people like Josh Donaldson who are just total assholes and are completely unrepentant.
Yeah, Josh Donaldson comes in at number 11. Tim Anderson comes in at, like, number 15. So, you know, that's that whole fucking thing.
I feel like there are a number of ways that this is not a good, whatever they're doing is not a great metric.
Oh, yeah. No, it is.
So
it is
many, many, many ways.
Does this count as science? I'm going to say no.
No.
I'm gonna actually say a hard no on whether or not this is science.
It's not even social science.
Yeah. Well, I hope you enjoyed this deeply political episode of Continued Oops. Success. Folks, I don't want to hear it.
No.
I don't want to hear it. I never really do. But, you know, it's a complicated sport that exists on many levels. But, hey, most important thing at the moment, Phillies have won 7 games in a row. Got a weekend series against the Diamondbacks. Should be, I'm looking forward to it. Should be a lot of fun to watch the Phillies play the Diamondbacks. As always, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and download all your favorite podcasts that are part of the Good Fight podcast family, including Hit and Season with John Stolness, The Dirty Inning with myself and Dr. Trevor Strong. We got a new episode of that out last week about an 1896 game against the Orioles that the Phillies absolutely blew. We were doing a 4-part event on the 4 times that the Phillies have blown like a lead of 6 runs or more in the 9th inning or later. Because of that game, they lost 8-7 to the Mets earlier this year.
Yeah.
But the vibes on this team have changed so much that I don't know if I feel like we got to do another one now that where the Phillies win the game. It just feels like things have shifted. So maybe we might shelf that idea for a second because, you know, who wants to hear about the Phillies losing when they're doing so well? And also head over to the Patreon at patreon.com/hittinseason. Me and Chris Jones have we do Absolutely Hammered now, where we typically are watching a Phillies game as it happens, so you get to experience the ebbs and flows of the emotional roller coaster that is Chris Jones while we do that. And Liz and I will be reviewing another movie this month, and there'll be some supplemental Dirty Inning material on the Patreon as well for $5 a month. It is well worth all the bonus Phillies content you receive. Liz, any final thoughts?
If you haven't seen the teaser trailer for League of Their Own, do it immediately.
Mm.
It looks so good, and I'm considering doing some Patreon content based around that because it looks good and it's fun.
I was going to say the same thing. Well, that comes out in August. I'm sure we'll be talking about it on the Patreon. So it looks, no worries there.
It looks, I can't, I've watched it like 50 times. I could probably, yeah. I could probably act out the whole thing for you at this point. But yeah, at least watch that as many times as you want and get excited.
I love Abby Jacobson and Darcy Carden, and I think yes. those are perfect castings for a new A League of Their Own. Just incredible.
Yes.
I think top to bottom, that series has a ton of great performers in it. So I think that's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So yeah, good thought. All right, that'll do it for this episode, and we will talk to you next time on Continued Success.